Welcome to Quebec Zulu Juliet. Long time no see, or listen rather, I suppose. Since my last, I have taken a deep dive into what I call AI augmented software engineering. And well, that's why I've been away from this podcast for a while. That has taken all my effort and energy and cognitive capability and everything. So, yeah, I've been a bit offline, not offline, but off air, I suppose. It's a radio communication podcast. And, well, I'd like to go through a bit what this has to do with this episode and why this episode is here now. It's actually all connected in a way. So in my day job, whether the assignment then calls me a senior consultant, a solution architect, software developer, or some other variant of individual contributor, as we call it, many of us who work like that went headfirst into the agentic loop when the AI coding agents suddenly became good enough to change the shape of their work, or our work, actually. So quite suddenly, projects that had previously lived somewhere between the backlog, ambition, and fantasy became things a single person could actually build. So that was my inspiration. That's why I went totally headfirst into this new era that we are living in. After my parental leave, I was a bit blank, or nulled of knowledge, I suppose you could call it. And I also had a period of work that was not exactly very intellectually stimulating. I saw a serious option, and that was to use AI to reclaim stale knowledge at machine speed and learn how to steer these AI coding agents properly and remain relevant in the software market that is now emerging. And you've all heard that we are losing our jobs and everything like that. And it's now going for knowledge work in general. Well, I don't think any of that is really true. Well, in some circumstances, it will be up front or at surface, but this is a discussion for another episode, perhaps. So looking back from where I am today, I have far surpassed the goals I set for myself. In my spare time, I have built a software and workflow infrastructure stack that could run almost any business workflow from edge to cloud to on-premise. And that includes standard deterministic workflows that we all know in finance or in other areas, as well as AI-enabled ones. I also have a vanity project, I guess you could call it, which is named Packet Systems, and that is papakilotango.systems. And that is where I publish my open source projects and my writing on AI augmented engineering, coordination, software architecture, and their related topics. It's not a business venture, at least not yet. There is a fair chance it becomes one in the not too distant future, although probably not primarily around the technical side of information technology, architecture, or software production. The more interesting part may be the managerial side, and that is what this episode is, really about. In September 2025, I started drafting a research-backed essay called 10x, The Coordination Shift, Software Engineering and the Centaur Era. The thesis was, in one sense, a straightforward extrapolation from theory of constraint, the management philosophy behind a surprising amount of modern IT thinking. Take Gene Kim's The Phoenix Project book, for example. It's structurally very close to Eliyahu Goldratt's The Goal. And The Goal is a business novel about explaining the theory of constraints, essentially. The difference is mostly that The Goal explains theory of constraints through a manufacturing plant, while The Phoenix Project translates the same logic into IT operations and DevOps, what we call DevOps. It's developers and operations collaborating with each other, essentially, to produce value. My thesis was, and it still is, that when software production becomes fast and cheap, the bottleneck moves, or the constraint moves. It moves away from execution and into coordination, judgment, verification, decision-making, steering, coherence, and everything else downstream of actually making the thing. The coordination side does not automatically become faster because you use AI. In many cases, it is as slow as it has ever been. AI can even make coordination slower because more work now queues up at those stations. More drafts, more prototypes, more options, more decisions, more things to inspect, accept, reject, sequence, or kill. So if you want to read more about that, you can download the essay at Packet Systems. Again, that's papakilotango.systems. In this episode of Quebec's Zulu Juliet, I'm going to read a text that I posted as an annual review of episode 30 of this podcast. And episode 30 was called Mission Command versus Swedish Defense Procurement Process. And some of you didn't appreciate that one at all. You thought it was incomprehensive, and perhaps it was. But it was mostly because I used synthetic voices to read it. And well, I found the voices were very good, actually, back then, too. I don't think they have improved that much. But some of you did not appreciate that at all. So that's why I'm reading this text this time instead. So you have to do with my voice and everything. So just a short recap then. That episode 30, it argued that Sweden's defense system is caught between two incompatible operating models, essentially. On one side, the Swedish Armed Forces doctrine of mission command emphasizes initiative, trust, and adaptability in the field. On the other side, Försvarets Materielverk, FMV, Foxtrot Mike Victor, it operates through a procurement system built around predictability, documentation, process control, and slow institutional movement. The original text argued that this mismatch matters in a world where threat development is fast, software-defined, and increasingly shaped by autonomous systems. The ability to learn and adapt may matter more than the ability to specify perfectly in advance. The military doctrine says initiative. The procurement machinery says process. That gap is a problem. And it has now been roughly a year since I started drafting that text, so we are due for an annual review. The argument began in the spring of 2025, before drones had fully become the organizing grammar of the war in Ukraine. The first version was the April 2025 essay called Toward True Agility in Swedish Defense Procurement. And you find that PDF on Packet Systems. The links are in the description of this episode. And that essay argued that FMV, Försvarets Materielverk, and the broader Swedish defense procurement ecosystem remained shaped by waterfall and V-model assumptions. V-model is the Victor model. At precisely the moment when modern defense capability was becoming digital, iterative, software-defined, and difficult to specify correctly in advance. The second version was the May 2025 podcast and the full transcription, Mission Command versus Swedish Defense Procurement Process. That text sharpened the argument by placing Swedish procurement logic against Swedish military doctrine. On one side stood Uppdragstaktik, Mission Command, which is built on intent, initiative, trust, tempo, and adaptation. And on the other side stood an acquisition system built around requirements, contracts, traceability, procedural caution, and delayed certainty. The claim was never that FMV is slow in the ordinary bureaucratic sense. That claim would have been far way too easy. The deeper point was that Sweden's doctrine and Sweden's capability delivery machinery were operating from different theories of action. Mission Command assumes that the world changes faster than central plans can absorb. It gives subordinates intent and expects judgment. Traditional procurement assumes that enough certainty can be produced upfront to specify, contract, deliver, verify, and accept capability through controlled stages. These are not merely different methods, they are different views of reality. One treats uncertainty as the environment in which capability must act. The other treats uncertainty as a risk to be reduced before capability can be delivered. 1 year later, that contradiction has not disappeared. It has become easier to see. The April 2025 essay made the practical reform argument first. It argued that true agility in Swedish defense procurement would require legal, organizational, cultural, and technical reform at the same time. Procurement law and its interpretation would need to allow capability-driven, modular, outcome-oriented contracts rather than fixed-scope specification contracts. FMV would need to move from a control tower model toward long-lived cross-functional product teams that include FMV personnel, suppliers, and actual end users from the armed forces, actual sailors and soldiers in the loop. The culture would need to protect experimentation, blameless learning, and fast user feedback. The technical foundation would need secure DevSecOps platforms, whatever that is, shared development environments, telemetry, automated testing, modular architectures, and continuous delivery. The essay also warned against the common theater of modernization, installing modern tooling inside an unreformed operating model. DevOps tools do not create agility by themselves. They are tools. They are products of an agile worldview. When they are grafted onto a waterfall bureaucracy, they usually produce frustration rather than speed. The phrase in the essay was deliberately blunt. It was putting DevOps tools into a waterfall organization is like putting a jet engine on a wagon. The part is modern, the vehicle is not. The May 2025 text then made the doctrinal argument. It compared Swedish mission command with a V model and traditional defense acquisition. Mission command is intent driven. The V model is specification driven. Mission command decentralizes judgment. Traditional acquisition centralizes control. Mission command expects adaptation. Traditional acquisition treats change as a cost, a deviation, or a contractual problem. It also compared that acquisition logic with my outcome-based agile framework. OBAF begins with outcomes, not requirements. It treats constraints as boundaries, not pre-selected solutions. It treats plans as a hypothesis, evidence as arbiter, the teams as owners of problems rather than executors of task lists. In hindsight, the April and May text belong together. The April essay said that Sweden needed different legal, organizational, cultural, and technical machinery. The May text said that this was not merely a delivery preference. It was required by the logic of mission command itself. A military can write doctrine around initiative and still equip itself through processes that punish initiative. It can speak in terms of mission effects and still contract for outputs. It can praise adaptability in the field while starving the capability pipeline of feedback, experimentation, and local authority. That was the core claim. The issue was never paperwork as such. The issue was the relationship between intent and delivery. The annual review needs a second frame, and that is the thesis from 10X, the coordination shift, software engineering in the Centaur area. You can find this essay in the description of this podcast episode and also on Packet System, papakilotiger.systems. The coordination shift is simple to state. When AI and automation make execution cheaper, faster, and more abundant, the bottleneck moves, or the constraint moves. In software, the bottleneck moves away from typing, scaffolding, drafting, and implementation. Those activities, they still matter, yet they become less scarce. That's the whole idea. The scarce resources become intent, judgment, architecture, verification, coherence, integration, ownership, and the coordination between units. Execution gets cheap. Coordination becomes visible. The same pattern is now visible in defense. If procurement can be accelerated, procurement is no longer the bottleneck. Once buying gets faster, the constraint moves downstream and sideways. doctrine, training, operator skill, data pipelines, logistics, repair, electronic warfare adaptation, software updates, stockpiles, experimentation rights, unit level feedback, manufacturing scale, and decision latency. This is why the 2026 review cannot stop at the fact that Sweden has announced faster purchases. Faster purchases, they matter, they are necessary. They are not the same thing as a faster capability loop. The defense version of the coordination shift is this. When capability production gets faster, the bottleneck moves to coordination, verification, absorption, and learning. This is also why Ukraine has become the reference case. Ukraine is not the reference because it entered the war with the most modern force. It did not. Ukraine is not the reference because it has the most exquisite platforms. It does not either. Ukraine is the reference because it has turned war into a live capability learning system. In the May-April 25 essay, I argued that agile procurement was no longer an aspirational ideal, but a strategic necessity. 1 year later, that sentence reads less like a recommendation than an understatement. By May 2026, the drone war had moved from important to structurally dominant. Ukraine and Russia now expand drones at a scale that would have sounded implausible to many European defense discussions only a few years ago. FPV drones, Shahed type systems, reconnaissance drones, naval drones, fiber optic drones, interceptor drones, electronic warfare payloads, and improvised integrations are no longer experimental edges. They are part of the operating fabric of the war. The exact battlefield percentages should be handled carefully, obviously, but official claims, commander estimates, and open source analysis, they do not always measure the same thing. The direction, however, is not ambiguous. Drones now shape sensing, striking, attrition, interdiction, force protection, logistics pressure, and the cost exchange logic of the battlefield. More importantly, Ukraine has built mechanisms around them. Brave One Market lets Ukrainian units use combat-earned E-points to order drones and related systems. Ukraine's Ministry of Defense reported that the units had ordered 240,000 drones and other systems through the market in 6 months, with average delivery time around 10 days and hundreds of Ukrainian-made products available. That is not merely procurement, it is a feedback system. The unit creates battlefield effects, the state allocates purchasing power, technology floats back to the front, manufacturers observe demand and performance, the loop tightens. The data layer matters just as much. Ukraine launched Brave One Data Room, a secure environment for testing and training military AI systems using real battlefield data. Reporting in 2026 also described Ukraine opening battlefield data access to allies and defense companies for AI model development, with large quantities of annotated material from real combat missions. This changes the nature of defense innovation. The battlefield is no longer only consuming capability, it is training the next generation of capability. That should unsettle just about every traditional acquisition organization. The decisive advantage is not merely who has the best drone today, it is who has the fastest combat-validated learning loop. The annual review has to be fair. Sweden has not ignored the lesson. In October 2025, the Swedish government announced more than 5 billion Swedish kronor for increased anti-drone and Gripen capabilities, explicitly stating that anti-drone lead times would be shortened by 8 years, from a previous final delivery target of 2036 to down to 2028. In January 2026, the government announced more than 5.3 billion for drone and space capabilities, including loitering munitions, reconnaissance drones, unmanned airborne electronic warfare capabilities, and unmanned maritime systems. In April 2026, Sweden announced a large air defense and anti-drone package intended to broaden protection beyond military units toward population centers and critical infrastructure. These are real changes. They also prove the point. The system can move when political pressure, budgetary permission, and operational evidence become strong enough. Sweden can shorten timelines. Sweden can place large orders. Sweden can use existing industrial capacity. Sweden can recombine known components into useful systems. And Loke is perhaps the most interesting example here. The Loke counter-drone concept, developed by FMV, the Swedish Air Force, and Saab, was deployed in a NATO mission in Poland and it became part of the Swedish base defense capability. Saab later received an FMV order for a mobile, modular, counter-UAS, counter-unmanned aircraft system worth approximately 2.6 billion Swedish kronor, with deliveries in 27 to 2028. Saab describes the system as built from established components integrating sensors, effectors, and selected third-party technologies into an interoperable solution. That is useful work. It is also not enough. Loke is valuable as local protection. It is a serious effort within Swedish constraints. It demonstrates that Swedish system can compose available products into a new operational package under pressure. Its limits are equally important. The current war does not only ask whether the system can defeat one drone, five drones, or a serial attack. It asks whether a defense system can survive mass variation, cheapness, operator adaptation, EW counter-adaptation, and cost exchange pressure over time. A counter-drone system that can protect a base against limited attacks may be excellent inside its intended envelope. A national defense posture cannot confuse that with the ability to withstand the scale, density, and adaptation rate visible in Ukraine. Sweden has accelerated selected procurements. It has not yet demonstrated a national capability loop comparable to what the war has forced Ukraine to build. The strongest concept for the 2026 review is initiative density. Initiative density is the number and variety of purposeful, coordinated initiatives a system can generate per unit of time. It is not speed alone. It is not innovation theater. It's not the number of pilots, projects, startups, or procurement decisions. Initiative density is a practical ability to run many meaningful moves at once. Experiments, deployments, tests, adaptations, deception measures, training changes, production shifts, software updates, procurement adjustments, EW responses, and doctrinal refinements. A system with high initiative density does not wait for one perfect program. It creates many bounded initiatives, observes which ones survive contact with reality, and scale the ones that work. A system with low initiative density may still spend a lot of money. It may announce large packages and buy advanced systems. It may even accelerate selected procurements. It still cannot generate enough simultaneous adaptation to keep pace with the changing opponent. John Boyd's OODA loop is useful here, although the level of analysis has changed. The problem is not only whether an individual commander can observe, orient, decide, and act faster than the opponent. The problem is whether the whole capability system can do so. Can the state observe battlefield change? Can it orient across doctrine, industry, procurement, training, and intelligence? Can it decide without waiting for the old planning cycle? Can it act through production, deployment, software, EW, and operator training before the adversary's next adaptation arrives? When the answer is no, doctrine is trapped inside the unit, while the system around the unit remains slow. That is a Swedish contradiction in its 2026 form. Mission command cannot remain a battlefield doctrine only. It has to become a capability development doctrine. Major Olof Glantz made a useful distinction in his essay Om uppdragsstrategi och byråkrati, which is directly translated as About Mission Command and Bureaucracy, which he published in Military Debate, Militär Debatt, in April 2026. His argument is not primarily about procurement. It is about the internal military tension between mission command, bureaucracy, risk minimization, and organizational design. The important contribution is the balance he draws between centralization and freedom of action. War requires local judgment because war is non-linear, unstable, and resistant to prediction. Centralized linear control overloads when reality diverges from the plan. Mission command therefore depends on people who can interpret context, exercise judgment, and act when opportunity appears. At the same time, not every part of the military organization should be decentralized. Logistics, personnel administration, procurement, law, finance, security, and resource allocation require stable structures. Certain flows need standardization, predictability, and control. A military force cannot exercise local freedom of action unless it is equipped, supplied, paid, governed, and supported by systems that work. Glantz captures the principle in a useful formulation: centralized flows, decentralized effect. That formulation should be read as a design rule for initiative density. Initiative density does not mean organizational looseness. It requires disciplined centralization in the right places. Logistics channels, procurement mechanisms, compliance evidence, secure development platforms, data governance, interoperability standards, model evaluation environments, and repair replenish flows must be stable enough to create freedom of action. The error is not centralization as such. The error is centralization that migrates from enabling flows into operational effect. The defense organization should centralize the machinery that increases trust, throughput, safety, and interoperability. It should decentralize the decisions that create local effect on the changing conditions. This distinction strengthens the annual review. The argument is not less bureaucracy everywhere. The argument is better organizational design. Centralized flows where stability creates freedom. Decentralized effect where judgment creates tempo. Glantz also adds a necessary human layer, practical wisdom. Mission command requires officers and operators who develop judgment by making real decisions under constraints. If every meaningful decision is escalated, reviewed, delayed, or standardized away, the organization does not merely lose tempo. It prevents the development of the very judgment that mission command requires. This matters for procurement as well. Capability systems cannot learn if all practical judgment is displaced into documents, approval chains, and retrospective justification. A learning system needs people and teams with authority to act, observe, correct, and own the result. The second concept is combat-validated learning loop. A combat-validated learning loop is a system where operational use creates evidence. Evidence changes decisions, decisions change production and deployment, and the next version returns to the field fast enough to matter. This is stronger than user feedback. It is stronger than lessons learned. Most organizations have lessons learned processes. Many are graveyards for insight. The lessons is written down, filed, summarized, briefed, and slowly metabolized into, well, nothing. A combat-validated learning loop is different because it has a pathway from observation to changed capability. In Ukraine, this pathway is increasingly visible. Units use systems, the battlefield produces video, telemetry, mission results, failure modes, and operator reports. Procurement mechanisms allocate purchasing power. Manufacturers see performance. AI systems are trained on real data. New systems are tested, bought, adapted, and returned to the front. The loop is not clean. It is not free from waste, politics, duplication, error, or danger. Its decisive property is simpler. It is alive. traditional procurement can learn, but it often learns at the wrong cadence. It learns through studies, evaluation reports, requirement updates, budget cycles, and replacement programs. That may work for slow-moving platform domains. It is much less suitable for drones, EW, AI-enabled targeting, software-defined capability, autonomy, and sheep mass. In those domains, the learning loop is the capability. Ukraine is the clearest reference because its learning loops are visible, urgent, and internationally demanded. Other conflicts point in the same direction. The wider wars and confrontations around Gaza, Lebanon, Iran, the Red Sea, and the Gulf have shown initiative-rich operations across intelligence, supply chain, cyber, drones, air defense, long-range strike, and psychological effect. The Hezbollah pager attack was not an AI story in the Transformer era sense. Public reporting indicates a long prepared supply chain operation rather than a sudden generative AI breakthrough. Its relevance lies elsewhere. It demonstrated that modern war reaches deep into procurement channels, device trust, logistics, communications habits, and organizational assumptions. Operation Rising Lion, Israel's June 2025 campaign against Iran, will be studied for years. Public analysis emphasizes intelligence, preparation, surprise, conventional air power, pre-positioned or covertly enabled effects, and synchronized action across domains. The strategic consequences, they remain debated, but the operational pattern is already clear enough. High initiative density can dislocate a larger adversary when intelligence, preparation, deception, fires, and decision tempo align. The point is not to romanticize Israel or Ukraine or any other actor. The point is to notice the common pattern. The relevant organizations are not merely buying platforms. They are combining intelligence, software, drones, operators, supply chain access, targeting data, deception, and rapid adaptation into initiative-rich systems. That is a new competitive field. This also changes the defense market. For decades, defense industrial credibility was associated with platform maturity, engineering depth, certification, national trust, and prime contractor scale. Those attributes still matter, obviously. Fighter aircraft, submarines, air defense systems, sensors, missiles, naval systems, and command systems cannot be replaced by improvised drone workshops. In drones, EW, autonomy, interceptors, and battlefield software, another form of credibility has become strategically valuable: combat-validated learning speed. This is why Ukraine is now being approached by countries that would previously have looked almost exclusively to established Western defense primes. Gulf countries facing Iranian drone and missile threats have reason to listen to the state that has spent years defending itself against Shahed-type attacks, mass drone waves, EW-contested environments, and sheep strike economics. That should be uncomfortable for Europe. Ukraine began the full-scale war with a force still shaped by Soviet inheritance. It did not become a reference because it started with the best procurement model or the most modern defense industrial base. It became a reference because survival forced it to build learning loops that many richer countries they still lack today. That is the strategic embarrassment. Europe is not short of engineers, defense companies, research institutions, money, or strategy documents. Europe is short of exploitation speed. It can explore, it can analyze, it can regulate, yeah, for sure. It can produce papers, it can announce frameworks, it can fund programs. The decisive question is whether it can metabolize battlefield change into fielded capability before the next adaptation cycle arrives. The Swedish problem is no longer simply procurement latency. Procurement latency remains real. The 2025 to 2026 evidence nevertheless shows that selected procurements can be accelerated when the pressure is high enough. The deeper problem is low initiative density around the capability once procurement has moved. Glantz's distinction helps state the problem more precisely. Sweden does not need decentralization everywhere. It needs centralized flows that enable decentralized effect. The purchasing channel, compliance system, logistics backbone, secure development infrastructure, and data governance layers should make initiative easier, not harder. A system can buy more drones without producing enough drone operators. It can buy counter-drone systems without building enough national saturation tolerance. It can buy loitering munitions without integrating them into targeting, training, EW, logistics, airspace management, command authority, and replenishment. It can buy AI tools without building classified inference infrastructure, secure data pipelines, model evaluation, red team procedures, auditability, and operator trust. It can buy systems without creating the learning loop that makes those systems improve. It can also preserve formal mission command while denying the practical decision-making needed to develop mission command in people. Without real decisions, there is no mature judgment. Without mature judgment, there is no serious decentralized effect. The 2026 review should therefore not claim that nothing happened. Something did happen. Much of it happened at the easiest layer to describe politically: money, orders, acquisitions, and named systems. The harder layer is the living system around the equipment. That is where mission command either becomes real or remains doctrine. The April 2025 essay toward true agility proposed an agile procurement lab, or skunk works, as a realistic starting point. Selected systems, empowered teams, short cycle, continuous demonstrations, open retrospectives, and direct collaboration between FMV, suppliers, end users, and regulators. In 2026, the proposal should be made more operational and more severe. Sweden should not only measure budget, orders, deliveries, and program milestones, it should measure learning velocity. How long does it take for an exercise observation, Ukrainian battlefield lesson, a NATO mission finding, or operational failure mode to change a procurement decision? How long does it take for a drone or EW failure mode to reach the manufacturer, the training unit, and the next software or hardware revision? How many parallel experiments can the system run without collapsing into coordination overhead? How many operators, maintainers, instructors, and tactical leaders are created per delivered system? How quickly can countermeasures be tested against new drone types, frequencies, guidance methods, and attack patterns? How fast can a classified AI capability move from dataset to evaluation to deployment under audit? How many skunkwork-style capability teams have real authority to change course based on evidence? How much compliance evidence is generated continuously by the delivery system rather than reconstructed after the fact? These are not vanity metrics. They indicate whether the system is alive. The old procurement question was, did we deliver what we ordered? The new capability question is, did the system become more dangerous to the adversary because it learned? So back to my shameless plug here of the outcome-based agile framework. It is directly relevant to this problem because it is not a ceremony framework. It is not a scrum with different vocabulary. It is a framework for outcome ownership under uncertainty. It begins with intent, constraints, signals, hypotheses, feedback loops, and after-action learning. That makes it much closer to mission command than traditional requirement-first procurement. Mission command says, here's the intent, act with judgment. OBAF says, here's the outcome, the constraints, and the evidence loop. Own the problem and adapt based on what reality tells you. The Centaur manifest, it adds an AI era operating model. If the OBF is the portfolio level of a framework for an organizational level, the Centaur manifest it's a framework for the unit. In AI augmented work, a small human unit can explore, draft, build, test, and integrate at a speed that previously required larger teams. That only works when intent is explicit, constraints are enforced, verification is continuous, and learning is captured. This maps directly onto drone era and AI era defense. A modern drone unit is not soldiers plus equipment. It is a human-machine system. Operators, maintainers, EW specialists, intelligence, targeting, repair, software, data, logistics, training, and feedback. The same applies to AI-enabled intelligence work, counter UAS operations, maritime drones, and software-defined command systems. The scarce skill is not merely operating a device. The scarce skill is steering the whole human-machine capability loop. For industry, the opportunity is not to sell AI as decoration. Many have done that already. The opportunity is to build the operational substrate for constrained, high-trust, high-learning environments. That means secure local inference where cloud use is not acceptable. It means audit trails, model governments, evaluation harnesses, red team loops, synthetic data, workflow state, traceability, access control, and integration with real operational systems. It means the boring machinery that lets an organization learn faster without losing control. The same pattern appears outside the battlefield in small manufacturing, critical infrastructure, public sector operations, and defense-adjacent companies. Execution is getting cheaper. Tools are getting faster. AI can produce drafts, code, plans, analysis, configurations, and options. The bottleneck moves to coordination. Which changes matter? What must not break? What evidence is trusted? Who owns the outcome? How learning is captured, and how fast the organization can adapt without becoming incoherent. That is the same thesis in another domain. The defense case is simply the most unforgiving version of it. The April and May 2025 text got the main structural point right. There was, and still is, a contradiction between Sweden's doctrine of initiative and its traditional model of capability delivery. The original argument focused on procurement latency, true agility, and doctrinal incoherence. The 2026 argument has to focus on initiative density and combat-validated learning loops. Sweden has shown that it can accelerate selected purchases. That is good. It is also insufficient. Ukraine has shown that the decisive advantage in drone-era warfare is not simply possessing drones or even producing drones at scale. The decisive advantage is connecting units, evidence, procurement, production, data, AI training, and battlefield feedback into a loop that learns faster than the adversary. That is the coordination shift in defense. When production gets faster, production stops being the only constraint. When procurement accelerates, procurement stops being the only explanation. The bottleneck moves to the system around the capability. The next Swedish reform, therefore, cannot be another strategy document, another isolated pilot, or another accelerated purchase alone. It has to be a capability learning architecture. That is what the April 2025 essay was reaching for when it called for modular procurement, long-lived cross-functional teams, blameless learning, secure DevSecOps environments, and agile skunkworks. 1 year later, the language can be simpler and more severe. Sweden does not only need agile procurement. It needs a national defense capability loop that can survive contact with a faster learning adversary. Not outputs, but outcomes. Not delivery as final acceptance, but delivery as the beginning of learning. Not procurement as administration, but procurement as operational strategy in motion. Not mission command only in the field, but mission command in the capability pipeline. The state that learns fastest wins the next version of the war before the slower state has finished buying the last one. That's it for this episode of Quebec Zulu Juliet. I hope you have, found it interesting to some degree. And as you can hear, this is what I'm doing today. I'm all into AI on both high and low, then you could say. The low level is the very low level of C programming. And that's what I'm actually engaging in right now with the AI coding agents producing a lot of code. I think I'm up to about near, I'm getting close to 1 million lines of code, which doesn't really say anything about capability. Obviously, you shouldn't count lines of code there, but it has a capability and it has a purpose for the future and it has a coherence, obviously, since that's what I do as a human in the loop here. I steer the agents towards a coherent system in the end and a vision. Obviously, and you can read more about it on Packet Systems, that papakilotango.systems. And well, yeah, high and low, as you can hear, this is a very high level. This is on a national organizational level, essentially. But we are individual contributors, and I think you could say that soldiers in that loop as well, they are constrained by the systems around them. I have taken a big interest in this for a very long time. I saw the DevOps movement very early and got all into that, which I found is exactly the same thing as I'm discussing here. It's the learning loops around it. What we as individual contributors, and we don't own the whole the result. We only own a role or a part of it, and we need to, well, that's what I'm arguing for then. I usually call it vertically integrated, but I think it's more vertical responsibility or vertical ownership, rather, if you take the English term there. So that's what I'm doing right now, and that's why there are not that many episodes on Quebec Zulu Juliet for now, and I think unfortunately that will continue. I have plans that maybe I should start a Packet Systems podcast, but then it would obviously be more about AI, not anything in radio communication per se. Well, that's it for this episode, and well, as I usually say, 73, this is Mike, Sierra Alpha 6, Mike Whiskey Alpha, out.
Holds the root, orbital knows what lines compute, parallax wide above the grid, running the future under the lead. Packet systems blue on black, packet systems no rollback, parallax live on every line, orbital high on the command line. Packet systems shell and steel, human nerve and machine will, shadow integer sucks the root, and the future starts to boot. Packet systems, midnight prompt, built for pressure, built to hold. No applause and no parade, only signal cleanly made. No dead weight and no disguise, only hard truth under violet skies. Every path cut close and lean, every system sharp and mean. Not for drifting, not for show, but for the things that have to go. Delay and past excuse into one time live for use. Packet systems blue on black, packet systems no rollback, parallax live on every line, orbital high on the command line. Packet systems shell and steel, human nerve and machine will, shadow integer sets the root, and the future starts to boot. Trace cold air in the rack space. Kernel pulse, hard light, CLI glow all night. Not a dream, not a brand, just the shell and just the hand, just the will to make it run, just the many built from one. Oh. world coming up in